I believe the FDA is doing a very commendable job under the most difficult of circumstances. In society as a whole, we have the challenge to try to establish and adhere to a standard of maximizing benefit and minimizing risk, which should not be confused with a policy of avoidance of risk. If we adopt a policy of risk avoidance, we will fail to discover many large benefits. We are experiencing our greatest life expectancy in the history of the United States. However, in the last 10 years, most of that improvement in life expectancy is not due to the patients, but due to the healthcare providers and the policy of wider utilization of drugs of life-saving benefit, because the chief gains in mortality have been in cardiovascular disease. And if we look at the risk factor profile of patients in the U.S., other than cigarette smoking, the untreated risk factors are all in the wrong direction. In fact, we are not only the fattest society in the world today, we're likely to be the fattest in the history of the world. And I think it's the earlier and aggressive diagnosis and management by patients and the utilization of drugs of life-saving benefit that are playing a big role in why we have the increase in life expectancy. And I think there's a downside to this because many people prefer the prescription of pills to the proscription of harmful lifestyles. These drugs should be used as adjuncts, not alternatives to managing lifestyle changes.
And we are a society that is increasingly reliant on pharmacologic advances to not only to treat conditions, but to prevent them. There are many other areas where medicines have revolutionized the way we live in a positive way. Diseases that were considered uniformly fatal 30 years ago today are chronic diseases. At the same time, these medications do have life cycles. And once they go onto the market, they get utilized and we find new uses for them. And eventually, we have to recognize that sometimes we will find replacements for them.
My own perspective has been that the drug approval process at the FDA is extraordinary, really. I think where I see as an academic researcher the deficiency is in the post-marketing surveillance, and I'd be interested in your views on that.
I think it goes beyond post-marketing surveillance. I think it's really this concept of life cycle, that just because a drug goes to the market doesn't mean that it's been thrown over the fence and the FDA and the academic and practice community are done with it and that we know everything about it. We take very, very seriously the need to continue to assess and reassess the balance of risks and benefits based on additional clinical trials, for new uses based on comparisons of an existing old drug with what we understand about a new drug, and even to the point of sometimes drugs having to come off the market because the risk, the balance of risk and benefit is no longer tenable given what else is on the market or what we know about the older drug.
And also, when the FDA approves a drug, it's out in the general public. And even though we know it's physicians who are prescribing these drugs, the patient will come in and say to the physician, I want to try this new drug. And it may not be the typical type of patient in which the drug was studied right in the first place. And so with a bigger population, you may end up seeing some side effects that you weren't seeing in the large-scale randomized controlled trials that
That's right. That's right.
It sounds like there's a great deal of discussion about how much weight to place on risk versus benefits. Can you talk a little bit about the research that goes into making the decisions?
Most people don't realize how extensively medicines are studied before they're marketed in this country. The system that we have here in the U.S. for clinical trials is the most robust in the world. The data collection is intensive, as well it should be. The public should demand that that FDA have very high standards for drugs to be studied.
Well, Dr. Apovian, how do you explain this to a patient? I mean, you're in the trenches. How do you simply say this drug is safe or these side effects are unlikely? How do you address it?
It's very difficult to keep using the words safe and effective. Patients need to hear more than that, because it's not true. Just because it's FDA approved doesn't mean it's 100% safe, because you're always weighing the risk of taking that drug and the risk of not taking the drug and leading to the progression of the disease that we're taking the drug for. So I tend not to use percentages, you know, 1% risk of developing myositis, let's say, or 1% risk of developing insomnia, headache. I tend to use a denominator, say 1 in 100. I think patients really get, they know what 100 people looks like. So 1 in 100 is indeed that risk they can understand. So I tend to break the percentage down into numbers for the patient. So it's all in the context of risk, benefit, and you need to know your patient's disease. You also need to know your patient very well to understand what they are going to be able to absorb from your conversation with them.
Right. Sometimes we have to be prepared for the fact as physicians that patients, even though we think as the physician that 1 in 100 is not very high, that risk to that patient may be so important that they're still not willing to take it.
That's right.
But as long as they understand, and we're confident that they really understand, that is their choice.
That's right. It's important.
We have trouble with that as physicians.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
It's important, and sometimes they don't really understand
right.
1 in 100 because that risk of that particular, say, impotence or, could even be headache.
Headaches.
If they have a history of migraine headaches
right.
and they have a bad experience
yes.
with that particular side effect, 1 in 100... they're not going to be able to get that because it's so personal to them. And then we have to let our patient, if we understand that they understand, we have to let them make their decision.
Right.
As much as we'd like them to take the drug because we know it's going to help them.
How do patients use risk information to make decisions?
Well, you know, patients are going to take in risk information given to them based on their own personal experiences. So you need to be aware, again, of the type of patient who is sitting in front of you and understand that that patient's psychological and social makeup is going to affect how they perceive the risk.
A lot depends on where the patient is in their own life. So, for example, when we present the risk of drowsiness, that's an important risk for someone who has to be alert to take care of a family member or who has to be able to drive.
That's right.
And their livelihood depends on them being able to drive, and they are not going to be able to accept the risk of drowsiness that will prevent them from earning a living.